Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. Today, we're going to talk about one of my very favorite places here on Oregon's North Coast, and actually, Southwest Washington, and that is Lewis and Clark National Historical Park. This gem, this treasure is right in our backyard, and they're doing lots of things that maybe you're not aware of. So today, I am so fortunate. I have in the studio John Burby. John is the superintendent of Lewis and Clark National Historical Park, and he's been with the park since January of last year, and I'm just thrilled that he's now here in the studio. Welcome, John.
It's a real pleasure. Thanks for having me in. Excellent. I always like talking about this great place.
Yes, and there are so many things happening people aren't aware of. Well, before we start talking about summer programs and youth programs and new things that are happening at the park, let's have a listening audience get to know you a little bit. So please tell us about your background.
Sure. So I've been with the National Park Service for 21 years, and it's all been an accident. When I went to the University of Washington, became a history major, I thought back to, gosh, why do I love history? From a really young age, I can remember this being the thing that drove me in school, the thing that excited me. And thinking there at that moment as a 19-year-old, it was thinking back to two visits to two national parks, Fort Vancouver National Historic Site when I was 8, and then the following year, maybe 2 years, but soon thereafter, we came out and visited Fort Clatsop National Memorial, it was this amazingly, strong memories as a kid. In fact, stepping into the fort today, even though it's, the third replica or a second replica, Fort 3.0, the sensory, the look of the place, the smell of the place takes me back to being a kid. And I think that's one of the powers of national parks is just engaging that wonder. So became a history major. And like most University of Washington history majors, my goal was to head on to law school, but decided to take a year off and took a job in Vancouver. And in fact, almost immediately after I went to work for this place, they went out of business. I'm not sure if I was the kiss of death or not, but went to work for them. They went out of business, and I realized, oh gosh, I need to get a job before I, go on for future law school. And but the places that were going to be places I wanted to work were not going to be hiring on Saturday, right? So on my Saturday, I decided, let me recenter myself, get that moment back. So I went down to Fort Vancouver and had perhaps the worst tour I've ever had. It was not good. Later worked with that ranger who took me through, but it really kind of upset me a little bit. And that evening, talking to my folks, I was complaining not about having delayed law school, not about being tied into a job that went away, but about how the park should be better. And my mom said one of those things that only moms can say, which was, I hear you complaining, I just don't hear you doing anything about it. So the following day, I went down to the park and signed up as a volunteer. They ruined a perfectly good volunteer by hiring me not that much longer after that. First as a seasonal, working at Fort Vancouver, went off to Death Valley National Park for a season, met my wife there, came back to Vancouver, enjoyed it. But the thing, you lay out a National Park Service map that shows all these sites, and there's nothing but adventure awaiting ahead of you. And so I started looking at, gosh, where could I go? What history interests me? Went to Fort Frederica National Monument in Georgia, first as a field ranger, became a chief ranger there, British fort from the 1730s, couple years later, headed off to Castillo de San Marcos and Fort Matanzas, the place the British and Georgia attacked in Florida. So I either, had seen the light or become a traitor, depending on my volunteers in the two parks. Could have stayed there, but had great opportunity present itself to go to Washington, D.C. and serve as a fellow for the National Park Service. And in Congress for a year, working in the Senate, worked on some bills, including one that helped create a new national park site in Nevada called Tule Springs Fossil Bed. So went there as the first superintendent. But boy, something about the misty, moisty Pacific Northwest woods, and when the opportunity came to you know, apply for this position up here, it was a great chance to get back here. And so now I've worked at the two national parks that excited me as a kid, and I couldn't be more thrilled to be here.
That's great, and that changed your life, that visit to the park, really.
Absolutely. You know, there's it's always fun when you get together with a group of rangers and you hear that story, because so many of them have those transformative moments where the parks changed them, and definitely had that opportunity as a kid, and one of the reasons I like being a park ranger today is I get a chance to provide those opportunities for others.
Yes, and what's wonderful is now, because you've really, in a way, kind of come home in the Pacific Northwest, your parents live in Longview, you know, you have your children love it here, they're happy here. And you came into Lewis and Clark National Historical Park, and there were already a lot of things happening, but, you know, for those folks who aren't even familiar with what is Lewis and Clark National Historical Park, what is it? Because most people think it's Fort Clatsop, but it's much more than that.
Well, in fact, you know, my memories of 1980, I'm dating myself or so, but 1980, 1981 was really 125 acres around the replica fort that were preserved. And of course, that great museum and visitor center. As the parks expanded, you know, that's the thing about the Lewis and Clark story. It's not like a moment in time just in this spot, but there's all these spots. And as the park expanded, really at the time of the bicentennial of the expedition, to include many more sites. Of course, we never leave out our site down in Seaside, you know, that talks about the important work that some of the soldiers did, boiling salt water to create salt. And we've got the little commemorative site down there, but it expanded to include a lot of acreage that's allowed for trails. In fact, we have about 14 and a half miles of trails within the park now. But it also included stories that are just as pivotal, I think, to understanding the Lewis and Clark story on the north side. Clark's Dismal Niche, an area to be able to talk about just the pretty destitute situation that the explorers found themselves in when they got out here. The Middle Village site, or what is often called Station Camp, the extraordinary story there that extends thousands of years back. It's you know, beyond those 10 days of Lewis and Clark being there, the Chinookan story, the story of the native peoples. We've got some great exhibits there. And of course, we do so much with partnerships with our friends in the state parks, and up at Cape Disappointment State Park, you know, the big chunk of it's part of the national park. And then, of course, down on the Oregon side, the Fort to Sea Trail anchors down in Sunset Beach State Recreation Area. So it's all these sites and so much more. I love when someone asks the question of, where's the end of the Lewis and Clark Trail? And you know, there's really no end. It never ends. They came here, went back, but there are so many sites associated that people can go and explore in and outside the park. Go to Young's River Falls and see Sergeant Gass's Cataract, you know, that amazing waterfall. Everywhere you step, everywhere you paddle, you're within this history, and I love that about this site.
And so the park itself, you said before we went on the air that it's 3,410 acres.
Yeah.
And so how does that measure up to, you know, most national parks? I mean, what is the scale typically? I mean,
so for historic sites, it's actually pretty big, right? You know, we've got a 417 National Park Service sites. Well over half of them are historic sites, tend to be fairly small. You know, along those lines of the 125 acres that Fort Clatsop National Memorial was. Of course, you know, my last park, Tule Springs Fossil Beds, was 22,000 acres. You know, when I worked in Death Valley National Park, 3.3 million acres. So pretty small. But for the size of the park and for the number of folks we have here, which is fairly small, this park, I put this park up against almost any park for in terms of what opportunities lie there for recreation and what the important work that staff's doing to preserve the place. And not only just preserve, but restore it to that feeling of what it was like during Lewis and Clark's time there.
Yes, it's a really important park. And the mission of the Park Service, could you talk to us a little bit about what is the mission of the Park Service?
And that is, I think, one of the great things. A couple of years ago, in 2016, we celebrated the 100th anniversary of the founding of the National Park System. And the Organic Act, that thing that, you know, that piece of paper, that mere bit of legislation, it really defines the mission of the Park Service twofold. It's to preserve, you know, and protect these places forever, you know, not a week, not 20 years, but forever. And then the added difficulty, but lovely challenge, is share it with as many people as possible. I love these moments. I was speaking the other day with a veteran who, you know, had tours in Iraq, had tours in Afghanistan, and he was out hiking our trails. And he had this great conversation about, you know, just kind of getting his head right again. And he talked about this idea that these national parks, you know, that he's going around hitting national parks, visiting them, experiencing them. And he said it's reconnecting with him what's the best of America. In fact, you know, Wallace Stegner, who's a great writer, Wallace Stegner describes the national park system as America's best idea. And that truly democratic idea that all these places are so important and belong to everybody that they need to be shared as well as preserved is the beauty of the Park Service mission.
Yes, and it's important for people of all ages, all demographics. It's for everyone, the park. And especially we're kind of very proud of of the youth engagement programs that you have.
Yes, and in fact, you know, maybe it's just natural, right? Since my first kind of love in this vocation that I found was in national parks, that it's these programs that really get kids involved in our parks is pretty extraordinary. Of course, we have a great education program that touches so many of the students around here and on multiple grade levels, you know, kindergarten, second, you know, we've got fourth grade, almost every fourth grader comes here. The 6 for 6, where the sixth graders hike the Fort Tessie Trail. But what's really kind of neat is that it's not just reaching them for that brief moment, you know, those 2 or 3 hours that they're there, that the park has really invested a lot of time and energy and talent in the idea that these parks are an extraordinary place to really engage youth. So this summer, in fact, between work crews from the Northwest Youth Corps, Youth Conservation Corps, Student Conservation Association, we're going to have about 57 youth who at part of their summer are going to be working at the park, working on trails, working on restoration activities, working with visitors to help them find their story within the Lewis and Clark history. And I think that's pretty great. It's this great moment where I realized the number of people that this park has brought in through those programs who have then gone on to actually careers in the Park Service, both locally working at the park, but also working much further afield. Got someone at San Antonio Missions right now who is absolutely loving it. I think that's one of the great things that this park can do is engage youth. But also with that recognition, the park's there for everybody. There's opportunities for everyone.
Locals. It's not just for visitors. So the visitor numbers are up, right? Visitor numbers are
absolutely
up. And that creates challenges. I mean, again, there's that kind of catch-22 between, you know, preserve and protect the resource and yet bring as many people as possible.
Absolutely.
We're fortunate here that we don't have you know, a lottery system to be able to go into the park, which is some parks are having to enact that.
Yep. Yeah, we've still got room. You know, I love that we have so many recreational opportunities. You know, last year we had just slightly under 300,000 people that came to the Fort Clatsop unit. Still wrestling with the idea of how you count everybody because we have so many trail users. Our best guess last year was around 50,000 people in addition to that using the trails. There are so many opportunities that the park even though on some days can feel pretty crowded, you know, when you're standing in a fort that was really, you know, initially designed for only about 33 people and you have a tour bus arrive, you can still just step just feet away and just connect with that story. Imagine yourself in you know, we talk about footsteps a lot, right? In the footsteps of the explorers, but really, you know, put yourself in the moccasins of those explorers. And because of the expanded park, those opportunities are there.
Yes, and I know you've been improving trails, and we're going to talk about that in just a minute. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns. I'm your host, Donna Quinn, and today we're talking with John Burpee. John is the superintendent of the Lewis and Clark National Historical Park, right here on the North Oregon coast and on the Southwest Washington. Well, that's not really a coast, I guess. I
mean, a bit of coast, bit of river.
Yeah, bit of coast, bit of river. Okay. We're going to talk about summer programs that you have. You need volunteers at the park, John?
Absolutely. That's, you know, one of the great things is, because we have so many visitors, because we do so many things, we always have that need. And anybody you know who's interested can contact Sally Freeman out at the park. Just call out the park, and there's some great opportunities that we can utilize people's talents and time to help bring the story to life and restore the setting.
And because the headquarters really are at Fort Clatsop. Where those where the offices are. And that's a great idea. So the youth, there's youth employment, there's opportunities for youth, you have camps. So what are some of the things that are happening at the park this summer?
Well, one of the neat things, in fact, my son will be in one of the camps coming up in July 9th. We have the Nature Adventure Camp, and then July 16th, a week-long Nature Survival Camp. Reservations are required, so you know we recommend folks get online, check out the park website to be able to get kids registered who are interested. Again, we've you know have these kids who are now working through the Youth Conservation Corps who remember their time in that summer camp.
My nephews went through those summer camps, and they are incredible. Those are day camps, so I definitely recommend that you all, if you're interested, if you have young people, and I don't remember the ages right now, but the Nature Adventure Camp, the Survival Camp, go to the Lewis and Clark National Historical Park website and check it out and see if you can get your youth in those camps. They're amazing.
Oh, absolutely. It's you know, and each of them has an overnight opportunity. The first camp gets to sleep inside the fort. How cool is that?
Really cool.
And then the other gets to sleep out on the camp out on the Sunset Plains area near Sunset Beach. And great opportunities. The opportunities kind of that they'll have are similar to the opportunities anybody can have in terms of the trails. I like to really just every time I walk a trail, every time I get in a kayak, realize that people have the opportunity to explore this exactly the same way that the Clatsop Indians did, exactly the same way that Lewis and Clark and the expedition did by foot and by paddle.
I think a lot of folks don't realize all the recreational opportunities that there are at the park. One of your most beloved events is happening on July 11th.
Absolutely. So, you know, the most charismatic member of the entire expedition was Captain Lewis's dog, Seaman. He shows up again and again throughout the journals. Here's a dog that in 1804, Lewis paid $20 for when he was in Pittsburgh supplying up to getting ready to come out on the expedition. That's a huge expense in 1804. He was definitely a valued member. We talk about 33 plus one constantly, you know, that Seaman was very valued. So on that day, we'll have Newfoundlands. We actually have a local dog. We have a dog volunteer, which I think is one of the coolest things. Duncan and his owner comes out quite often. But on this day, there will be lots of Newfoundlands around.
I've been out there, actually, on that day, and it's amazing. People love it. It's just so much fun. And you're doing something new on July 8th this year.
Yeah, you know, in kind of the partnership with the Oregon National Guard, we're going to have a concert down at the Natol Landing portion of the park. They're kind of the old bus shelter from the shuttle days, where we'll kind of tie in that history. You know, the expedition was inherently a military expedition. Many people, I think, often, you know, see these guys in buckskins and whatnot and think this is not military. But, of course, Captain Lewis and Captain Clark and these soldiers were absolutely in the military. And it's a great chance to tie it in. Also, just talk a little bit about, you know, that this history that, you know, goes back to this first military fort. That's what Clatsop was. Continues in the mission of the Oregon National Guard at Camp Rylea today. So, yeah, July 8th, 2 p.m., a chance to hear Brass Ops, which is the brass section from the Oregon National Guard band. We'll talk a little bit about military signaling and play some pretty neat songs. We're excited to have something
new
to
show. And that's a free concert, right?
Free concert.
Open to everyone.
Yep, absolutely.
That's great. That's terrific. Okay, so that's July. What's happening in August?
Well, I'll say in August, but also all throughout the entire summer, starting on June 28th, we've got ranger-led kayak tours every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's really a great way to experience the place and you know, like I said, experience it by paddle, just like they did. Those programs are kind of tide dependent, as you can imagine. They're really a friendly way for folks to get into kayaking if you've never kayaked before, because we make sure that the tides are favorable for returning to the fort as well. So that's a great opportunity all throughout the summer. Then when we get into August, of course, really heavy visitation for us. But on August 25th, we'll have a bit of a celebration of Founders Day, the anniversary of when the National Park System was founded. We're 102 years old and still going strong.
Yes, and then moving into September.
September, we get into back into some of our pretty nifty things. We've a couple of years ago, kind of on a kick of looking at recreation broader than just the hiking, we've gotten into runs. And it amazes me the number of people that show up for these runs that, you know, are on trails that essentially approximate the location of spots where soldiers marched or walked mostly before. So on the 22nd of September, we'll have our South Sluice Scramble. But also in September, we start to kick into this really fun period where with our partners, we put on some pretty nifty lectures, both at Fort George, is part of the Nature Matter series, but also in their footsteps series, and great information on the park website about those events as we get into fall. It's kind of, you know, as we see the visitors, although we don't seem to have a slow period anymore locally, but as we see the typical visitors from afar, it's a great chance for locals to engage in the park, and those lectures are very popular.
Yeah, you have programs going on all the time. I mean, throughout the year. I mean, in fact, are you ever closed? Is the park ever closed?
So we do. Ironically, we close on the very day that essentially they moved into the fort historically, on Christmas Day. Beyond that, we're pretty much open. In fact, during that period, that kind of the day after Christmas to New Year's Day is one of the best ways. I was talking to some folks yesterday from who are visiting from Missouri. They were on the trail, as so many of our visitors are, and they were just amazed at how nice the weather was. They had heard a stereotype that it might be rainy out here at times. And they
can't imagine where they got that idea.
Absolutely. And they're like, this is wonderful. And I really invited them to come back in January and February when that's a real time, you know, time and place to experience the Lewis and Clark story, and ideally put on some moccasins while you're in the misty, moisty weather. But there's activities year-round, and the park will be kind of increasing opportunities to experience it in different ways throughout the next several years. That's what I'm excited about being here.
Yes, because there are always new things that are going on. And when I ask you about, like, what are some of the changes that are happening, you're saying you've been improving those trails. And so there are more opportunities for recreation for people.
Absolutely. So the trail system is really top notch. There's good accessible trails like the Natole River Trail. There's short, very fun, mildly funny trails and like the Clay Pit Trail. And then there's, you know, the Grand Trail, of course, is the one that approximates the journey that people would take out to the ocean, particularly to head down to the salt works.
That's a gorgeous trail.
Fort to Sea Trail is an amazing experience. And I say to anybody that if you want to have a moment that will stay with you forever. Time it out right so that your hike down to the Sunset Beach part of the park happens at sunset. There's not a better experience in the Pacific Northwest, in my opinion.
John, we only have a few minutes left, and there's still so much more we could talk about. So what things maybe have we not touched on, or what would you like the listening audience to know about? It sounds like, obviously, first we want to have people go to the website so they can look about these camps to sign up for and all the different opportunities that are going on, and you need volunteers. But what other things would you like the listening audience to know about the park?
So, you know, if you're into social media, the Facebook site and the Instagram site are full of just amazing little things, not only just about the events, but a chance to really engage in the overall story. So I'd highly recommend folks to check out the park's Facebook page or site and the Instagram site as well. The other thing that I always want folks to realize is that this national park that's in our backyard is an absolute ambassador to an entire nation of parks. Those who are around in October, we've got some great opportunities as the 50th annual meeting of the Lewis and Clark Trail Heritage Foundation will be in town. Get a hold of me if you're interested in finding out more, and including a chance to get out on the river and see some of the Lewis and Clark sites via the a cruise ship. There are just so many opportunities that people have a chance to explore this site and come on out.
Yeah, I think it's, sometimes I forget even. I mean, we all forget sometimes. Like, I think, oh, it's a nice day, I should take a walk. Well, I've walked around my neighborhood. Well, gosh, it's only a few minutes to go out to, you know, to the park and or go across the river and go to one of those sites across the river. I mean, there are some amazing ways to get out and interact with the park. And again, it's for people of families and for, mm-hmm. you know, no matter how old you are. What happens when you're out in a protected place in the natural world? Everything slows down, and our world is so fast now.
Absolutely. I look at those wonderful moments that I've had in my life where things seem so hectic that getting out on a trail really seems to put things in perspective. Taking that moment to breathe, taking that moment to experience, and that's what our national parks are, as well as our great state parks around here.
Health and well-being. It's good for the body, the mind, and the spirit. Absolutely, that's so true. Yep. Well, I'm excited that you're here because I can see feel your passion for the park and for what it does, and it changed your life going to a national park.
Absolutely.
And so, for those of you listening, there are opportunities to bring the young ones out and let them connect with something beyond their phones, their cell phones, and their video games. It's really crucial, I think, that we have that. We have people connect with that, our young people.
So. Absolutely. And I appreciate the opportunity to share those stories. And come on out. We've got some rangers who are ready to talk to you.
Yay. All right. Thank you so much, John. Really appreciate it. I'm so glad that you're there. And you will be definitely seeing me out at the park a lot more.
All right. Outstanding.
And it's, again, all year long. There's something there. Just Christmas Day is the only day they're closed. And I love the gift shop, too.
It's extraordinary. And there are partners who help us do great things. So,
yes.
Come out and visit the bookstore as well.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks again, John. And I want to express my appreciation to Terry Wilson, our engineer extraordinaire, as usual. And my gratitude to local talented banjo instructor Michael Bruin for his original theme music for this program. Until next week. Find a moment for yourself today, right now. Take a deep breath. That's what you feel when you go out into the parks. Take a deep breath because it's good for you. It's good for your body, your mind, and your spirit. And then with gratitude, focus on the things that are working well in your life. There will always be those things that don't go well. However, take the time to nourish yourself with that deep breath. And then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you, the only one, and for doing the best you can, because everyone really is, for being here now in this moment on the amazing planet we call Earth.